Welcome to Catholic Sports View on Immaculate Heart Radio. A look at the athletes and coaches who shape the Trinity League. Exploring where athletics meets faith. Now, here is your host, Bob Gibson.
Thanks again for joining us this week. We're going to have a special two-part series over these next couple of weeks. It's a special look back at the 2017 school year as it happened right here in the Trinity League. And we kick off our show this week by looking back at an interview we did with the J. Sarah High School football coach, Jim Hartigan. He was excited about the way his team was shaping up for the 2016-17 season. Coach Hartigan has since left J. Sarah, but it was fun to talk to him out at J. Sarah High School back in August. Coach, you just won a championship, your first of a couple there at Santa Margarita. At what point did you think, hey, the offers obviously started to come in a little bit? At what point did you identify that Clovis West and completely moving out of the area was the right move for you at that time?
I had an opportunity potentially to take over the Saddleback Junior College program. It was myself and Coach McElroy were finalists, and obviously he ended up taking the job and has done a phenomenal job there with Saddleback. And so I looked at that as an opportunity to maybe coach at another level to see whether or not I was capable of taking over a junior college program. I had some opportunities to go to Cerritos Junior College, decided not to go. I had an opportunity to go to Bishop Gorman. When Bishop Gorman was on its old campus, or the original coach stepped down, and I talked with them about potentially going out there and coaching, and then passed on a lot of those opportunities. I just felt like it wasn't the right fit at the time. But when Clovis West, the opportunity came, it was probably the right time personally for my family and I to kind of take a step back from what we accomplished and try something different, you know, different part of California, a public school, to see whether or not I could coach in a public institution and do as good of a job. And fortunately for us, we took some good coaches with us. Coach Manise was with me at Santa Margarita and some others. We went up there and had a great run. We were in the championship, CF championship, 3 of the 4 years we were there. We beat De La Salle twice. We beat De La Salle at De La Salle. We had a great group of kids, a good coaching staff, and more importantly, a phenomenal administration that really supported football and athletics. It was a really good school, and it's still a good school, and I'm glad that I went there. So I enjoyed my time at Clovis West.
Obviously, football is a team sport, and you preach team, but how much fun is it individually to be able to match minds with a legend like Bob Latissure and be able to beat him on his turf?
You know what, it was great. You know, it was when I first got the job at Clovis West, they forgot to tell me that they scheduled De La Salle. And so I like, wow, De La Salle. So I spent the off season meeting with Modern Day, meeting with Long Beach Poly, getting as much tape as I could from people that played them and just really spent the summer splitting up tape with my staff and asking them to come back with notes after our break to talk about, you know, what they saw. And so we basically all had similar ideas, and we saw some things on tape that we felt like we could maybe take advantage of. And so we put together a phenomenal game plan. We actually flew to Seattle the week before to watch them play. When they got beat by Bellevue, we were hoping that we were going to be the first to break the streak, but we weren't the first to break the California, you know, home streak. And then the year after that, we shut them out, which was hasn't been done in like 30 years. So it was really rewarding for us to know that our coaching staff took on a really great coaching staff at De La Salle and a legend in Bob Latissure, and just really put our ideas on paper onto the playing field. And our kids executed it beautifully, and it was a great win for us, both of them. And I went back a couple years later to visit De La Salle and pick Bob's brain some more. And he asked me why I was up there, because, you know, we beat him twice and that he should be coming down visiting us. But I have a lot of great respect for him and that program.
Yeah, what they've accomplished over the years, obviously, you know, huge. When did you first hear the name J. Sarah? And what was the thought process? Did it start kind of going through your mind that, hey, maybe this is the next destination for me?
When I was at Clovis West, Servite called, and that was a possibility that Coach Logan and Coach Barnes and myself were all in that triangle of, you know, who's going to be the next Servite coach. That was a job that I was interested in. You know, I had knee surgery, so I wasn't able to come down for the interview, but I did a phone interview. And so that was probably the first thought of maybe going back to Orange County. Golden West was an opportunity as well, Golden West Junior College. And that was something that, you know, I decided that I've come this far in high school, I'm going to probably finish in high school. El Toro High School called me, you know, another good little program down here that And so I said to my wife, I said, hey, you know, we're starting to get a lot of inquiries. You know, maybe it's in the cards for us to potentially go back to Orange County. And then Andy Sulik called me. He played for me at Santa Margarita on our charter class team. Said, hey, I'd really like you to come down here and take a look at this position because we'd like to, you know, get this program, you know, competitive in the training league. And so that opportunity came down. I visited with some folks and knew that we'd have our hands full to start with, particularly since they were put in the training league with a brand new school. But I was excited about coming back to Orange County. I was excited to get back on a Catholic high school campus. I was excited to build a program that I felt would be a diamond in the rough here in Orange County.
What were the differences? Were there similarities? But I imagine there were differences in building Santa Margarita at that time and then coming in and having to build a new program with Jay Serra. But you'd done it before, obviously.
Yeah, the experience of building a program obviously was in our favor, but we had the luxury of not being thrown in the training league at Santa Margarita right away. And the training league wasn't what it is now, but it certainly was really good. I think it was the Serra League at the time. But I think we won a couple championships when I left. And I knew how good it was, but it just got even better when they brought some other teams into it. And so the difference was we knew how to build a program, but we had no players. You know, it was a new school with not a lot of football talent and not really a lot of foundational things in place. And so we had to really put that in place from weight training to conditioning to hiring a solid coaching staff to getting the proper video equipment, all the things that we needed in-house to compete. So we built the infrastructure of what we thought it would take to win. And then we obviously had to go out and recruit players, you know, and we did some youth camps and we did some clinics and we started to get some interest in visiting the local feeder schools, particularly Catholic feeder schools. We got some interest. And so we slowly kind of put this thing together. And hopefully we've arrived, at least gotten over the hump, and we want to be competitive every year from here on out.
Also earlier this year, we had a chance to go out to Modern Day High School and talk with Tia Meza. Not only is she the athletic director for the Monarchs, she's also a sports legend, is the National Softball Player of the Year in 1999 when she played at Modern Day. You got to start here, obviously, at Modern Day as a player. Gatorade saw National Softball Player of the Year in 2000. When you kind of reflect back on that time now, how special was it and be able to achieve the heights that you achieved out on the softball diamond?
You know, Bob, it was such an amazing time to be, you know, to be a student and be an athlete at Modern Day really is a privilege. I enjoyed every moment of it. We had so much fun, so many memories. But to be the first Gatorade National Player of the Year at Modern Day when we had such a history of great athletes truly is, you know, is a special place. And I've been fortunate to be here now when Katie Lou won two years ago. So it was nice to be here as, you know, then a faculty member and staff and work with her with that. So it's been great.
You were Tia Bollinger back then for everyone who remembers your playing career here at Modern Day. You gave up, one earned run that whole season. Do you actually remember that? I know so many players remember the one thing that went wrong rather than the 100 things that went right in the year.
I actually do. It's funny. You always do kind of remember some of those things. It was against Rosary High School. Rosary Academy now. But it was just one of those plays where, I mean, one earned run is pretty spectacular. But, you know, it was a great season. I had great support from, you know, teammates. And I was very lucky.
Now, your father played professional baseball, correct?
Semi-pro.
Semi-pro, okay.
Yeah.
So growing up, was baseball and softball always in the family?
Oh, definitely. I mean, from 7, I started playing softball. But I did other sports. You know, here in Modern Day, I was actually a 3-sport athlete. Mm-hmm. I played water polo. I did a year of golf. You know, when both those sports came up as first years for females. So it was great to be able to do multiple things here at Modern Day, which we do have quite a few multi-sport athletes now, but it's not the same as it used to be.
How special a place is this in Modern Day? I mean, you see both sides of it now. You're back here as a member of the faculty. But, you know, when you really look at the entire campus, the entire experience, you know, how special is this school?
It truly is, you know, a place like no other. The family, the community, the type of care that our administration has, our faculty has, the parent involvement, it really does make this place one of a kind. And that's, as an adult, I see the value in it. As a student, I enjoyed it. That's what everybody had. Everybody had the same experience. And now I know that's really not the case, that you're really lucky if you get to have this kind of experience that we have here at Modern Day.
Is it important for you to work on that now as a member of the faculty to make sure kids who come here and are getting that experience that you did?
Oh, definitely. You know, I was the director of admissions marketing, now being the athletic director. The experience is really important to me because I know that not everyone's going to be the star athlete or get the 4.5 GPA. And it really, when you look back, the experience, the memories, the opportunities those students get, it. That's what the kids are going to hold on to and remember.
In your playing career, when it ended here, you ended up at the University of Washington. Why the choice to become a Husky?
You know, the opportunity to play in the Pac-10 or the Pac-12 now, it was just, that's the best softball there was. So to play for, you know, Teresa Wilson was just an amazing experience to be on the West Coast, close to my family. Knowing that I was going to be, you know, on the West Coast and come to California a lot, it was really important to me. And the opportunity to, you know, compete for a national championship. So that's kind of some of the things I looked at, as well as, you know, a great education that I was going to get.
When did you know that you have this talent, you know, to play softball, that you were a special player, you know, somebody who was a cut above just the normal, you know, kid going out and playing softball?
You know, I was never really the most talented kid out there. I was always the kid who had to really work hard. I mean, I threw 5 to 6 days a week and practice, and a lot of that was my parents dragging me out there to practice. But at some point, you know, I knew if I worked hard enough, I was going to get the opportunities. And my work ethic is really kind of what helped me become, you know, the great player that I was.
After graduating, I think it was Cal State Northridge, I think you went and coached there a little bit. Did you think you might end up coaching, you know, at the college level? Was coaching something you wanted to do when you graduated?
When I was done, I kind of stepped away from softball. I went and did a couple different things. I tried to get into production and television, and I got married to my high school sweetheart, you know, modern day grad class of 99. And we started a family, and so that piece just didn't really work out. And so the call to come back to softball kind of opened up, and the opportunity to go, and I coached at J. Sarah for a couple of years and then went to Cal State Northridge, and had the opportunity to work with college athletes and a program there that was, I really enjoyed the head coach. And so, you know, I really thought, okay, this is what I can do and be a softball college coach and go out recruiting. But for family, it's really difficult to be kind of out on the road. It's not just season. It's, you know, recruiting and all those kind of things. And so for me, a call came back to modern day and it was home. So I jumped at the chance to come back here.
Thanks again to Coach Hartigan and Tia Mesa for visiting with us earlier this year. Quick break here on Catholic Sports View. When we come back, much more in our year-end review. Stay with us. Welcome back to Catholic Sports View. I'm Bob Gibson, and thanks again for joining us for our look back at the 2017 school year here in the Trinity League. Well, we had a chance to visit with Martin Dugard. He is the cross-country coach at J. Sarah High School, and if his name sounds familiar, it's because he's also the co-author of a series of books with Bill O'Reilly. We had a chance to talk with Coach Dugard.
I like to pray. Let's put it that way. So we start every practice with a prayer. We pray before every race. You know, very often I share my own testimony. And I feel like if these kids realize that what they do is a gift from God, it's not just about them, it's a blessing. You know, every day is a chance to give thanks and to experience the glory of God. You know, if they can absorb that, and it's not just something someone, you know, throws at them, it's something that they own, that they wear, that they live it every day. Look, I'm not perfect. I'm great temper. I have moments in practice where I get very impatient. But I also like the kids to see that you can be a godly man and have those emotions. You know, like David was a man after God's own heart. David was highly flawed. I just want people to know, yeah, you can be flawed, but you can also be a great Catholic, a great spiritual warrior. And you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be pious and holy. You can be all. You can be the full package for God.
Yeah, very true. Very true, Coach. Well stated. You listen to Martin Dugard, the head cross country coach at J. Sarah High School. And, Coach, odds are you're a coach, you wear a lot of different hats, but odds are right now that almost everybody listening out there may have a book in their possession with your name on the front cover. And people might be thinking, Martin Dugard, yeah, I've heard that name before. And it's probably because many people do have your books. You've written 5 different books with TV personality Bill O'Reilly. How did you get into authoring books in the first place?
It's a long story, but let's put it this way. I took my time finishing college because I just didn't know what I wanted to do. And I got a corporate job, and when I finally finished, and I was just miserable, and I'd always liked to read, I'd always liked to write. And so I went to a career counselor after, you know, 2 months into my corporate career. I took all these tests, and she said, have you ever thought about being a writer? And that was all I needed. You know, that kind of gave me permission. So I began writing magazine articles on the side. I started off, this is 25 years ago. I started off writing for small running and triathlon publications. I worked my way up the magazine world to, you know, Sports Illustrated and Esquire and GQ. And then at some point, I left the corporate world and became a full-time writer. And I kind of moved into books because my kids, I've got 3 boys, and they became old enough that it wasn't great for dad to be traveling. 4 months out of the year to chase these magazine stories. So I've been writing books. My first one was 1998. And I started off in sports. You know, I covered the Tour de France for 10 years during the Lance Armstrong days.
That had to be an experience.
Oh, man, I got to tell you, if you ever get the chance to go to the Tour, even just for a week, it's not just about the bike race. It's about the history and the scenery, the wine and the cheese, the food. It's the whole package. It is just the most transcendent. It is just wonderful. I kind of miss it. I'd like to go back one of these days. So then, you know, everybody asked about the books with Bill O'Reilly because I began writing history, and that's what cross-country ties into it, because the team was in Mammoth for our annual summer training camp, and I got a call from my agent in New York asking me if I could be in New York the next day, the day after that, the day after that for lunch. He had a client who wanted to talk to me about doing a book. He wouldn't tell me who it was. So I literally left the team under the control of my assistant coaches. I drove, you know, through the night to the airport, made my way to New York, had lunch with Bill. We hit it off, and we started doing history books together, and it's been a great collaboration.
By last count here, over 10 million copies in print of, Killing Lincoln, Killing Kennedy, Killing Reagan. I know I'm missing one or two here. Fascinating looks into history. I imagine it takes just a whole lot of research to get into these stories that we all think we know really well, but you guys have been able to really dive deeper into the subject matter.
That is how I spend my days. I coach in the afternoon, and I research and put stuff together all day. You know, that's the trick. The trick is to not just tell the story in a way that makes you turn the pages, and to reinvent history in such a way that it's not the dry old history book that everybody falls asleep reading, and which I do too. I love history books that make history come alive. So that's our goal, is to, like when we did Killing Jesus, you know, everybody thinks they know the Jesus story. Everybody knows the Gospels. You know, you go to Mass and they do the Gospel reading. Well, what we sought to do with Killing Jesus was give a context. Talk about the Romans, you know, persecuting the Jews and you know, the timber of the times in a way that people didn't just understand the Gospels, but they appreciated the Gospels. And so when you read them, you really get the idea of how horrible it was and how brutal it was to live in that time and the horror of the crucifixion itself and you know, what Christ sacrificed for us. You know, it's a big thing. And, you know, in the fact that even they would not have called him Christ, and Christ was a term that was affixed later. He was Yahweh, or he was Jesus. You know, it was a different thing.
Is there, and we're visiting with Martin Dugard, the cross-country coach at J. Sarah High School and author as well. Is there a certain, catharsis or something involved in the writing that is similar to that in running?
They're both a process. They're both a discipline. And I get a lot of satisfaction out of both of them. When I go for a run, I tend to get lost. In my lost, I mean, I just kind of, you know, my problems all slip away. I just get so relaxed out there on the trail in particular that I just, you know, miles can fly by without me not even noticing it. And it's the same with what I write. You know, I mean, I wrote for 4 or 5 hours this morning. You know, I could still be doing it. The time just flies by. Once you lose yourself in it, just that, you get that sense of ease and that sense of focus, that laser-like focus that just kind of carries you. It's very addictive. I will say there's got to be some kind of dopamine, just like in running, that makes it so addictive.
Well, we spent a lot of time out at Rosary High School. A lot of good stuff happened with the Royals this year, including their basketball team. And little did we know when we talked to Coach Yoon earlier that season that his group would go on to win the state championship. Congratulations once again to the Rosary Girls Basketball Program. This is when we had a chance to talk to Coach Yoon earlier in that season.
What are your earliest memories of maybe thinking, hey, someday I want to make basketball, you know, really a big centerpiece of my life?
Well, playing basketball in my life, you know, I've played in almost every level of it. And I just tried to be the best I could be at it. But after I was done, I've hit my limits. I wanted to give back. And so coaching basketball anywhere was just fun for me. Teaching was probably the biggest thing. And trying to give back all the things I've learned. So it's always been a passion for me.
Talk about a little bit about the road that got you here to Rosary. Where was your coaching start, and how did that all come to fruition for you?
Well, actually, I was, you know, trying to go to grad school, and I was in transition and looking for any job, basically, you know, that I can fill throughout that time. And the road just took me here, and I started coaching JV basketball here. I had a great first year, and the following year, the varsity coach wanted to step down and offered me the position, and we did some amazing things that first year, and it started to become very fun, very exciting. The community here welcomed me so much that I spent, this is what, my 25th year here now. So, yeah, I spent all my young adult life and my older years, if you consider me old now. But, yeah.
So, 22nd year, I think, as head coach now?
Actually, it's my 25th year. Yeah, going into it. Yeah.
So 25th year.
Fifth year, yeah.
Well, time flies, huh?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, so many highlights along the way, and we'll talk about those. But how has coaching changed over the years? Is it still, you know, ball goes in hoop and passing around the outside? Or has the game changed and has coaching changed over those 25 years?
Coaching for me is always a different, there's always a different aspect that is thrown in every year. I always say that you play with the deck of cards that you've been dealt with. And so I have to change my philosophy. I have to change my offense, my defense to the personnel that I have. So it's an ongoing learning lesson for me. I have to go study things all the time to try to figure out how we can do the best and get the most out of my players. And so every year, I think I wouldn't be in it if I just did the same things year in and year out. So for me, the challenge is trying to get our students to be the best student athletes they can possibly be so that we can be successful in this crazy league that we're in.
Yeah. Yeah, this Trinity is really something, that's for sure. How much fun is it for you to match your wits against, you know, Coach Kiernan, Coach Rosignol, all the great coaches that coach here in this Trinity? I mean, there's so many great, we talk about all the great athletes, but there's so many of you great coaches as well in this league.
That's true. You know, I respect all the coaches in our league, and every day playing, you know, one of these top teams gives me more and more insight. I learn from them just as much as, you know, I put different things out on the court. So every day they show me things that I can expect and maybe my players can expect that we haven't thought about before. Or at the same time, they give me new ideas on how they can also be successful doing things different ways. So I am so grateful that I'm in this league because every day it gives me a chance to be better, better than what I was yesterday, and provide opportunities for my team to get better.
Do you think people understand how tough it is to compete in the Trinity? I mean, do girls come in knowing how tough it's going to be and the level of competition that this presents?
I don't think they recognize that. Some kids expect it and other kids don't realize it, but we get a mesh of both. It's not like kids who come here just want to play basketball. Mm-hmm. You know, we have everything. Our whole school is based on a mission, and it's not just basketball athletics. It's about the whole person, and we try to develop that whole person. So we really don't know if you're prepared, but you get a quick wake-up call when you get in on the floor for the first time, or even just see it on tape for the first time. Yeah. The physicality that they put on the court, everyone's in great physical shape, you know, the work ethic that everybody puts in. There is no bad team in our league. You know, everyone plays hard, everyone is competitive, everyone has great coaching. So I think it really prepares you for a playoff run that we take. We all do really well, I think, in our respective divisions.
You see the D1 players that come through the Trinity, even here in the city of Fullerton, Troy High School, right. One of the public high schools here, has always had a great girls program. So, you know, this really is a hotbed of girls basketball here in this community. Does that help make your players better when they get to play that kind of competition?
Absolutely. I mean, the girls know each other from all around this area, Brea, Troy, right. And all the other schools. And Modern Day is not that far as well. We all fight for the same, you know, girls, but these athletes, they are starting to go to schools that are known for basketball, and we just want to be competitive. We want to be right there along with the Breas and the Troys and Mater Dei so that we can, you know, say that we are relevant, you know, in everything that we do here, not just basketball.
Thanks again to Coach Dugard and Coach Yoon. Another quick break right here on Catholic Sports View. Much more to come and our end of the school year special. Stay with us right here on Immaculate Heart Radio. Catholic Sports View. I'm Bob Gibson, and we're wrapping up the 2017 school year as we take a look at all the great athletic programs that we were able to visit throughout the Trinity League. Well, we had a chance to catch up with Andy Kaufman, the head water polo coach at Servite High School. They had another fabulous year at Servite, and we talked about the sport of water polo and its growth here in Orange County.
Did you ever think swimming was your future rather than water polo? The two were so linked, obviously, but at some point you'd have to pursue one or the other, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I would say my generation is kind of one of that last generation where guys would do both. You don't see that as common anymore. Kids are just getting specialized a lot earlier. And for me, that swimming was a blessing in disguise. It gave me the motor to really excel and have the endurance to be the player that I was. So I think that was really important to that.
You end up at UC Irvine under the legendary coach Ted Newland over there. It's got to be a dream to play in that program for that coach.
Yeah, it was. I mean, Coach Newland, besides my father, is, you know, the biggest influence in my life. And it was at times trying to play for the old man, so demanding. But how he shaped you, what he gave you, and, you know, how he cared for you. I mean, it was amazing. The connections and the camaraderie that Coach Newland linked us all through and kept everyone very connected. It was a very special experience.
What were the highlights for you as a player at UCI?
You know, I'd have to say my senior year, I had a special group of guys. I would say we were pretty blue collar. I had a big freshman class, or my year was a big class, and we weren't blue chip players. We weren't highly touted recruits. And that's what Newland was really famous for, was kind of finding those diamonds in the rough and polishing them up. And we had probably one of the worst seasons the year before my senior year. One of the guys on the team was redshirting. He was an Olympian, so we were down. We had some injuries. I was coming back off of shoulder surgery and got cleared like the day before season. So I'm just saying, because that set up this great senior year where we were ranked number one more weeks than any other team and the number one seed going into Mount Pax. We didn't do as well as we would have liked to and make NC2As, but it was a dream season. Not only the success, but the people that I had that success with is unforgettable.
Got a chance to join the national team. How was that opportunity?
Well, I mean, I would say I was asked to go out there and train and try and make the team. I was probably one of the lower level guys on the totem pole out there. And I was actually invited to go out there when I was a sophomore in college. And I think that John Vargas, the coach at Stanford at the time, like I said before, my swimming was a big contributor to my success in water polo and training. And I think he just liked the low guy on the totem pole kicking everyone's butt in conditioning sets and using it as motivation. And he liked my toughness and that, but that was a great experience. Being able to train against Olympians when you're a college player and then go back to play your college games gives you a lot of confidence. It definitely was another way to take my game to the next level and then, learn things that I apply as a coach today.
And then a chance to play professionally? Have that opportunity present itself?
Well, water polo, you got to really seek out the opportunities to go above and beyond and play outside of college when you're in the United States. I was putting on a tie and doing commercial financing right when I graduated, sitting behind a desk, hated it. And I had a connection in Australia, and they were looking for a player of my type and caliber, and I didn't have to think it over long. You know, I probably made the decision at that desk, and again, it was one of those great experiences that water polo gave me. I was on a really good team. We were in the finals, and the relationships and living in another country was all great experiences.
We're visiting with Andy Kaufman, the head water polo coach out here at Servite High School on Catholic Sports View this week. At what point did coaching maybe start to circulate in the back of your mind? Was it ever something you thought about, or did it just sort of fall into your lap? I mean, I talked to so many coaches, and there's just so many different paths to coaching. What was your path eventually to get there?
Well, so many things contributed to. I already talked about Coach Newland. Mm-hmm. And how he led and coached people. My father was my first coach in T-ball and throughout baseball till I was in junior high. So I had those strong influences of coach-type people, not only coaching me, but, you know, bringing me up. combine that with my passion for water polo. And again, I go back to that working experience. You know, you kind of get into that, this is what you're supposed to do, graduate and get a good job. And it just wasn't me. And it just was kind of calling to me. I had my friend and teammate, Dan Klatt, who's the coach now at UC Irvine for the women's team and is also assistant for the women's national team. When he got hired for that job at our alma mater for the women's team, he called me to be his assistant, and the rest is history.
Yeah, the opportunity to go back to UCI, was that just too good to pass up?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't coaching full-time. I was still helping out. I was back from Australia. I was actually, because I liked the sports, the preparedness and the camaraderie, I was looking into being a firefighter. Starting to reflect in those that I wanted to live that kind of lifestyle where you have that camaraderie, you're training for a purpose, you know, you're trying to be a better person, you're trying to hone your skills at whatever craft that is, you know, coaching just seemed the right fit. And yes, my alma mater, which was the final piece to, you know, making me a player, it was a dream to go back there and coach.
Also in the winter sports season, we visited with Craig DeBusk, the girls' basketball coach at Santa Margarita High School. He is a second-generation coach at Santa Margarita, and it was a lot of fun to visit with Coach and talk about how his father helped shape him into the coach he is today.
Everyone knows the DeBusk name who's followed high school sports in Orange County, certainly, over the past couple of decades. Your father, Jerry, was the longtime coach here at Santa Margarita of the boys' program. I imagine your interest in basketball started pretty young.
Yeah, I think it's... You know, as soon as I could walk, I was thrown in the fire there. And when he was at Newport Harbor, I was on the bench as a ball boy. And that carried on, you know, sitting on the bench watching his games. And then ultimately, I ended up going to Newport Harbor and playing for him. You know, after that, I was done. I was still encouraged to continue my basketball career. And I found myself back, you know, helping him and assisting him back in, I think that started in 96.
Were you a gym rat kind of a kid?
Yeah, you know, I probably should have been a little bit more of a gym rat because I probably would end up playing a little bit longer in college. But I tried. I tried to be as, you know, stayed in as much as possible. But I had some good people looking out for me, and I always, I couldn't fake it. So when you play for him, play for my dad, and then you come home and have to hear it at the dinner table, right, you couldn't escape it too long, man. But I liked it. I loved it. So
I had the privilege of covering that area in Newport Harbor for several years. And, you know, one of the hallmarks there at Newport is the coaches stay a long time at Newport. I mean, coaches like that challenge and staying there. Eventually, your dad would move on to Santa Margarita and this challenge over here, you know, brand new high school at the time. Was there any kind of insight that it was a tough move for him to come over here?
Actually, he had one prior stop before coming here. He was at Chapman University as an assistant for Bob Boyd.
Bob Boyd, yeah. Okay.
And so he was there for 3 years. And actually, he left my senior year. And Bob Servin, he was our assistant coach. He took over for my dad and then went to Costa Mesa and then was an assistant at Modern Day. But I ended up playing for Bob my senior year because my dad got the assistant job over at Chapman. And then went, I think, for 3 years. They were okay, and then they kind of hit a brick wall, and Bob was out. And then he basically didn't get the head job over at Chapman, and they dropped the program down to, like, D3 or something at that time. It was right. Division II. And he was looking and trying to figure out where we were going. He landed here, and thank God, I mean, he did because, you know, for 20-some-odd years, 23 years, he averaged about 25 wins a season here, so... Yeah, I did a pretty good job here.
Was it a natural for you to follow into coaching, or did you have other ideas maybe in the beginning?
No, you know, the whole aspect of teaching and coaching, I think I really got that. It was in the blood and just, you know, I really didn't know anything else that I wanted to do. So as soon as I got out of that playing and then ultimately, you know, graduating college, I kind of knew that I kind of wanted to go back. And I started at the lower level, freshman. And then ultimately, he said, you know, my dad said, hey, come up, you know, to the varsity and start the journey. So that was 98 with the state team with Carson Palmer and everything like that. So it started off with a good right. kick. So I got to stay around. And after 12, you know, about 12 years, then it all came, you know, and I needed a little break after that. But it was a good run. It was a good run with the boys. So I enjoyed every part of it.
Wanted to ask you about your relationship, you know, with your dad, and is it an advantage, but as you start to develop your own style as a coach, were you pulling from him and from maybe other coaches that you played for?
Absolutely. Where you come from, what your stable, as we call it, in the horse racing industry, you don't venture too far off out of your stable, and he's been an instrumental part in my thinking and in my reacting, just not game management, but X's and O's, and I still go to him. But right out of the chute, he's very supportive, and we sat down prior to getting this job, and we hashed out all the old things that we took from back in the 12-year run that we had together, and I pulled all different spots. But ultimately, the success, you've got to get in there and make it your own, and I couldn't ask for any better person to shape where I came from, what I've been, you know, doing, and yeah, I fall back on all that stuff. So it really prepares me going into games and leagues and stuff like that.
You mentioned, you know, the Carson Palmer year 98. 10 years later, you'd have another run with another great player in Clay Thompson. We'll talk about him in just a minute. But the caliber of athlete that comes to Santa Margarita, that obviously has to help, because you know you're getting, you know, some of the best athletes, not just in South County, but all of Orange County, that they want to come here and play the various sports, and especially basketball here.
Yeah, we've been fortunate to have so many good athletes to come through, but I think what my dad's done here, especially with basketball, we have such good, well-rounded individuals. They went on to play, and they were successful, and they were, maybe not all of them ended up playing all 4 years, but they graduated. They were just, you know, the ones that played a little bit to the ones that, you know, are in the NBA. The one thing about what my dad was all about was get the most out of talent, and I think he really did that. Some years we weren't the most talented, but we found ways to win those games. When we were able to get, you know, and have a little bit more talent come through, and those guys that you mentioned, then it was just, you know, we took it to a whole nother level. And the Clays and the Jaime Cernas and the Jason Pankos and the Ryan Forehand Kellys and the James Keefs of the world, you know, those guys don't come too often. But when they do, they just take you to a whole nother level. But the greatest thing, the achievement that my dad was, is there was just never, we played to our full potential every year.
One more quick break here on Catholic Sports View, and when we come back, we will wrap up part one of our look back at the 2017 school year in the Trinity League. Much more on Catholic Sports View right after this. Catholic Sports View. I am Bob Gibson. We're looking back at the 2017 school year in the Trinity League, and we have to talk about Daryl Miller because he's done so much to help kids in Southern California play the sport of baseball. He opened the first Urban Youth Academy in the city of Compton, and in that Urban Youth Academy has gone on to spread throughout the United States. We had a chance to talk with the former Angel player and front office executive out at that Urban Youth Academy in the city of Compton.
We started a group called Catholic Athletes for Christ, and baseball's, there's a lot of guys, but there's a lot of guys in football too. And I think, but the reason there's so many, you know, people that profess their faith in baseball especially is because it's a hard sport. It's failure ridden. It's like life. And you know what? Baseball, you need an anchor. You know, when things are going bad, you know, if you have no anchor, you're in trouble. And in life, when things are going rough, you need an anchor. And that's why baseball really mimics everyday living.
We all know an 0-for-25 slump in life.
Yeah, we all know that slump, and we can get in these slumps in life. You know, like I told you, we've had a bunch of things happen in our family. Our kids had an accident. This happened. That happened. And you're like going, wow, man, it's raining pretty hard. So we all have those slumps, and without an anchor, man, you're in trouble. And that's why I think it's really important to have that anchor, if you will.
Yeah. So obviously, you come from the famous Miller family out in the Riverside area. Your brother's Reggie. Your sister's Cheryl. For those who don't know. How do three professional athletes come out of the same family? What was in the water out there? What did your parents do right? They were able to raise, you know, such a great family.
You know, I think it was just my dad really wanted us to use sports. My mom and dad, they said, you know, use sports to get your education because we can't afford to send you to college. And so we just tried to be good enough at something to get to college because we knew that was, there was no other option. You know, you had to go to college if you're in our family. And so I think that's how, the rest of it was a little bit of this hard work and individual determination thing. Cheryl was a gifted athlete. Cheryl's like 6 years younger than me. Reggie's 7 years younger. I have a younger sister named Tammy that went to Cal State Fullerton on a volleyball scholarship. And my older brother named Saul went to JC, learned the saxophone, played saxophone at a high level, and he was in the Airman of Note in the Air Force for 20, like his last 20 years. So he's an accomplished saxophone player. So we all were pretty accomplished, at least at the collegiate level, and used like whatever our talents were to get to school and get our scholarship and then move on with it. So I think that was it. And then the rest of it really is just, you know, Cheryl was a phenomenal athlete. Reggie was motivated because he was Cheryl's little brother. I was just trying to find a sport that I could get a scholarship in. And then I got lucky enough to get to baseball and become a catcher. And that changed my life. Being a catcher, because you can see my eyes aren't all that good, you know. They moved to the outfield. I couldn't see, you know. So it ended up being a better place for me and a safer place, if you will.
You mentioned, obviously, you know, we talk about, you know, Cheryl played at the highest levels, but there was no WNBA then, but she certainly would have been a star. We know Reggie's talent, one of the greatest shooters in NBA history. And certainly you know what it takes to get to the major league level in the sport of baseball. Are you able to take those stories, certainly you personally and within your family, and relay those to kids out here and tell them, you know, what it takes to get on that journey?
Well, I love actually talking about that because, I say, my little brother and sister played, this sport called basketball, and anyone can play basketball. I kind of make fun of it. And I go, but I really let them know that Cheryl was a really accomplished softball player, and Reggie was a really good baseball player as well. And they had great hand-eye coordination that helped those skills play towards the other sports. So you can always take what they're doing athletically as a football or a basketball player and relate it to baseball and vice versa. So these skills are really interrelatable. And I think it's really important kids need to know that they can play more than one sport. And that's the big thing. Let's go back to where we started. You know, everyone's feeling like you have to play that one sport when you're 10 years old, and if you don't, you're behind the eight ball. Well, the studies are telling us, UCLA released a study last summer that said the best collegiate athletes are the ones that are playing multiple sports until they're 15.2 years old. That means you're a sophomore. So if we're playing multiple sports through our sophomore year, it's really not a bad thing. It's a good thing. So the coaches need to hear this, and the parents need to hear this, because, you know, multiple sport athletes make the best athletes in the collegiate level. And that's the truth, and you want to play in college, then continue playing multiple sports. That should be encouraged, not discouraged. And people are discouraging you and your kids from playing multiple sports. You need to move out of that program and go to one that's going to encourage you to play multiple sports.
We know the sport of baseball is great, but the industry of baseball, or the sport of basketball versus the industry of basketball, has the industry and the money that can be made within that, has that hurt, you know, the kid, as we mentioned, that's trying to specialize now and not just having fun and playing and trying to get where they need to get?
Well, the industry is the youth industry, you know, the baseball youth and the basketball and the soccer youth industry, where people have decided that that's how they're going to make a living. See, those people didn't exist 25 years ago. We didn't have these coaches that are charging $80 an hour for pitching lessons or for soccer goalie lessons or for football lessons and speed training and all these other things. So we've seen a lot of specialty people pop up everywhere making a living off and predicated to make a living off that youth environment. And that's dysfunctional. I think the sports at the top, they're trying to figure out how do we manage that. And I think that's the real issue that we're all finding, is how do football and basketball, baseball, soccer, how do we manage what's going on at the youth level? Because this is very dysfunctional. And unfortunately, kids are being hurt because they're only playing one sport. We know biologically and physiologically it produces tremendous amounts of strain on a body when you're doing one thing the same way over and over and over again as a young person.
And as we wrap up part one of our look back at the 2017 school year, we have to look back at the season St. John Bosco had on the football field. That school out in Bellflower, part of the Trinity League, the only L.A. school in the Trinity League. Coach Jason Negro has built a powerhouse program out there. They lost to Modern Day earlier in the season. They came back and defeated them in the playoffs, and they went on to win the state championship once again in the sport of football. And it was our pleasure to visit with Coach Negro after that championship season.
Coach, first of all, congratulations on once again was quite a season.
Yeah, thank you very much, Bob. I appreciate you having me. And, it was an amazing season. Really excited about what we were able to, accomplish this year.
What's the feeling now when you think about what this team was able to accomplish from, the 2 days to start and from, hoisting the trophy there at the end?
You know, I think it just kind of, reaffirms the process in which we talk to our kids about all the time. You know, we start in the off season in January, and then we go all the way through spring practice, summer, our dead period, fall camp, and then the season. You know, so we talk about it being a process, and I think our kids understand that, it's a long, lengthy, timetable that they need to continue to prepare for. And I thought we did a really good job of overcoming a lot of obstacles this year. We had some injuries early in the season. We had a couple losses early in the season, one to Modern Day and one to Bishop Gorman. And we were able to overcome those things and ultimately end our season with two of the three goals that we had set out for. So I was really proud of the overall effort the entire 2016 season.
Yeah, you mentioned the Gorman loss. Coaches, you get asked a lot after a loss, or maybe you know, you say, what did you learn out of it? Or was it more of, hey, we felt like we didn't have our full team and we may have competed a little better if we would have had our full component?
I think so. I mean, you know, you never want to go into a game when you're down personnel, you know, but they're in the same situation. You know, Gorman had a couple guys that they didn't have at that time as well. And so you always look at that when you go to win a game. And I think the biggest thing we got from the Bishop Gorman game coming out of it was the fact that we felt we could play with anybody in the country. We had a 2-touchdown lead at one point during the game. We had a lead at the end of the third quarter going into the fourth, and we just couldn't finish it. So I think our kids at the end, there was a lot of unfinished business, so to speak. That's kind of what the feeling in the locker room was. And the guys were just like, okay, look, let's come back next week and get a little bit better and continue to go through the process, because we know if we want to win games down the road, we're going to reflect back on that game and understand that it was going to help us put in position, you know, to beat Modern Day or Centennial or De La Salle down the road.
You know, championships don't happen every season, but are the expectations now within this program at the point where you expect this team, these groups to come in and compete for championships every year?
Yeah, without question. I mean, expectations are always super high here. I mean, now over the last 6 years, you know, I've been here for seven. Over the last 6 years, we've been able to compete for league titles or even CIF championships. It starts there and then on to the state. So it's an inbred expectation for the kids that come a part of our program now. It's something that we talk about constantly. We have three major goals, and the first goal is to win a Trinity League title. A CIF title would be goal number two, and then a state title is number three. And then luckily, if you're fortunate enough to win those games and you play a good enough preseason, you have a chance to be talked about a national title. And we finished number two in the country this year, just a skosh behind Gorman. And if that game would have went a little different, we'd had a chance at a national title. So those are what our expectations are each and every year.
You mentioned the Trinity League, and that wasn't one of the boxes you got to check mark this year, but you end up getting your revenge on Modern Day anyway. That must really help not only you guys, but Modern Day and everybody who has to go through that gauntlet to get to a playoff spot.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. If you had to pick a box that you don't want to check, and you can check them all, and wow, that would be the one that we're not going to want to check. You know, certainly winning a league title says a whole lot because of the competition that's in the league, not only from the players, but the schools, the coaches. It's just, you know, six really good institutions that go at it each and every week for 5 weeks. And if you're able to come out of that thing as a league champion, it really says a lot about the type of season that you had. But certainly, I think the ultimate goal is being able to go through that gauntlet and being able to, you know, compete at such a high level. It prepares you for the playoff run that you're going to have to make. For us, going through it the way we did and playing Modern Day and having a 9-point lead in the fourth quarter and letting it go, very similar to the Gorman game, again, it prepared us for when we got into those situations later in the playoffs. We were able to overcome them, and we were able to find victories.
Momentum is such a huge thing in any sport. It seemed like Modern Day had that momentum going into that first game and kind of carried that through maybe to that victory. By the time we got to round two, come playoff time, it seemed like the Braves really had all the momentum, you know, going through the playoffs. Did you kind of have that feeling as we headed into that CIF championship game?
You know, I think coming off the Corona Centennial win in the semis was something that was really big for our program. You know, they ended our season in 2014 and 2015 in the CIF finals at Angel Stadium. You know, so getting over that hurdle, I think just gave our kids a bunch of added momentum and added confidence going into that Modern Day game. And we knew we had them on the ropes in the first meeting in the league. You know, we just couldn't hold on to it. We gave up a big punt return for a touchdown. So our kids again knew that if we just cleaned things up and we played at our capabilities, that we'd be okay. And, you know, hopefully in the fourth quarter, we'd have a chance to win. And that's exactly what happened against Modern Day in the finals.
Thanks again to Daryl Miller and to Coach Negro for spending some time with us here on Catholic Sports View. And we thank you for spending your time with us. Part one of our look back at the 2017 school year in the Trinity League. Be sure to tune in next week because we will have part two. So many more stories we were able to cover throughout this school year. And we hope you'll join us once again next week right here on Immaculate Heart Radio for part two of our look back at the 2017 school year. I'm Bob Gibson. Thanks again for joining us. And we'll see you next week right here on Immaculate Heart Radio.